I want to try to be respectful for to all the questioners, so I'll try to just answer in order. I want to go to John's question first about the rules for protection of non-combatants, or at least that's how I wrote the question down. It isn't exactly how it was phrased. And I want to generalize that just a little bit. You know, I find that many of the rules for how we should go ahead and conduct ourselves in space can be found if we refer back to the traditional laws of armed conflict that we all know, and that most of our rules for any war or fight or weapons in domain are based upon those. One of them is the notion of weapons that cause indiscriminate harm. So in on land warfare, we use that to go ahead and outlaw chemical and biological weapons, aerial bombardment, those kind of things. Debris-causing weapons cause indiscriminate harm to space, and so that's why I think we can easily reach agreement on that, because its basis is in the laws of armed conflict that already exist. Similarly, laws of non-combatants in a domain should be protected. Astronauts on a space station are not non-combatants in the domain. They should be off limits. If there were people in space planes dropping bombs from space, not that there are, nor do I think that's a very efficient or cost-effective way to do things, but if there were, then they would be combatants and they would not be off limits. So again, we can take these laws that are well understood. We do not outlaw war on the face of the earth. People refer to the nuclear disarmament treaties, saying that we should be able to translate nuclear disarmament to a decision to go ahead and prevent the placement of weapons in outer space. Those are two completely different things. Nuclear disarmament is the destruction of civilization. The placement of weapons in outer space is not. That's why you can't just translate that discussion to a space environment and hope to go ahead and get international consensus. But there are rules we can get international consensus on. Let me go to question number two. What does Space Force contribute to transparency? I love that question, because it's exactly the right question, and it also refers to a question that Victoria gave. Today in the U.S., we don't want to go ahead and negotiate anything because we don't know what our doctrine is for space combat, space war, space conflict, whatever you want to say. Lacking our doctrine, we don't know what rules we can agree to and what rules we can't agree to, so we agree to none, which I think is very harmful. I believe if we act a space force, one of its first duties is going to be to create doctrine. And that doctrine will then allow us to shape rules that are in everybody's interest, not just in the U.S.'s interest, in everybody's interest. We've done this in naval warfare. We've done this in air warfare. We've done this in land warfare. Each of those services have a history of doctrine, which we then use to create the basis for consensus about what kind of things we don't want to have happen in war. And I think that is a critical area for us to do. In terms of the question on a support function versus a warfighting domain, I think that's a great question, because we often hear that statement, but we don't know what it means. We actually knew space was a warfighting domain between 1960 and between 1992. Every U.S. satellite was nuclear hardened because we knew the Soviet Union was intending to attack them with nuclear weapons. And so we hardened the satellite against that. We designed satellite constellations back between 1960 and 1992. We designed them specifically to be able to exist through nuclear war and still help us go ahead and retaliate. That was a foundational element of mutually assured destruction, which kept the peace for those times. Somehow, after 1992, we forgot that space systems could be threatened. We stopped designing them as if they were threatened. We stopped thinking about what would an adversary do to eliminate them. It became a support function, a pure, peaceful support function, as opposed to thinking about what harm could come to these systems that we would not want to see happen. And so moving it to a warfighting domain means to start to think about it as if there is a potential for attack, recognizing the capabilities that others have demonstrated, and plan your systems so they can operate even through that attack, which is what we call resilience. Finally, to Victoria's question, I think I've already answered part of it. You're right, rules exist, but not enough rules exist, as Jessica said. I would love to see a rule that talks about how close you can come to another satellite in space. But today, under the Outer Space Treaty, you can come within one atom of another satellite and still be legally and still be on the legal side of that treaty. That, in my estimation, is a nonsensical interpretation of that treaty, and would indeed, in my estimation, would create harmful interference. Unfortunately, the way the Outer Space Treaty is written, it's only if it creates harmful interference on the case of the actor, not the person being acted upon, that it requires negotiation. So I think it would be good to go ahead and lay out no debris-causing weapons, what is safe distance of approach, what kind of notifications you should have if you're going to go ahead and miss those safe distances. One of the things that was brought up earlier is that I think critically, and it's not has nothing to do with warfighting, but is it how we're going to deal with the civilian uses of space that in and of themselves appropriate pieces of space. The question was asked earlier about civilian conflict in space. Right. When we put 12,000 satellites in space, it's going to appropriate a 10-kilometer shell in space. We better figure out how we're going to deal with that as nations, because we all are going to have to use that space.